we don't always know what's going to happen. So, gosh, I want to be prepared. Like, I want to have a survival kit in my metaphoric backpack to make sure that if something bumpy happens in the future, I'm going to be emotionally resilient and mentally resilient and prepared to manage that.
I want the packing list. What needs to be in there?
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
Today we're talking about building mental strength and resilience with Dr. Laura Pence. She was the host of our long-running Spartan Mind series, and she's a clinical psychologist who works closely with Spartan. To celebrate International Women's Day, our producer Marian Abrams, that's me, will be guest hosting today's show.
Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. Spartan Up listeners can save 10% on their first month by going to betterhelp.com/Spartan.
I am here with Dr. Laura Pence, who, if you've been around Spartan for very long, you probably know. She hosted something like 85 episodes of Spartan Mind, which if you haven't listened to them yet, you should go back. They're amazing. Laura is a clinical psychologist. So she's got legitimate credentials to tell you about your mind, right? And she has her own podcast, Curious Minds. So, Laura, this is going to be fun. Thank you for joining me.
You know when you grin so hard that your mouth like hurts? That's kind of where I am right now. I'm super pumped to be back on like the Spartan Up podcast ethos, but more excited to be talking to you because you're rad and we always have fun together.
Yeah, this is for the audience that doesn't know, you probably have heard my voice a lot. I've been behind the scenes for 8 years. I've done a couple of cameos, but this is actually the first time I have been the full-on interview host for the show. And the reason we're doing it in part is that we want to celebrate International Women's Day, and we thought, why not have an all-chick episode, right?
So Jam it out.
Yeah. So the reason, Laura... I've been watching your social media, and you have been talking a lot about emotional and mental strength and resilience, which is like our whole Spartan Up gig.
It is.
So let's start out. Maybe you can define those.
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. I've literally never been asked that before, actually, now that I think about it, which is not surprising that, of course, you're going to ask the thing that nobody asks, which is why I love talking to you. So, you know, when I think of resilience, I really think of our ability to rebound, but go beyond, like not just to get back to where we were, but to fall and falter and struggle and then rebound with new wisdom and knowledge that actually propels you forward. And so when I'm talking about mental resilience and emotional resilience, I'm talking about, you know, when something happens in your mind with your self-esteem, with your sense of self or adequacy as it relates to mental resilience, that then, you know, gives you a hit like, oh, I feel wounded. And now I'm going to bounce back and continue to move forward with more momentum than I even had before.
So, you know, we talk all the time about mental strength and we talk about mental resilience, and it's easy to kind of think they're the same thing, but I guess they're not, right?
I don't think so. I think that mental resilience is a part of having mental strength.
I like that.
And I think, because I think that you can be mentally and emotionally strong, but not necessarily have high levels of resilience. You know, for example, I could be emotionally strong. I could be very well aware of what my emotions are at any given point, able to regulate them, able to respond to them appropriately. But until I get hit with something that kind of like throws my emotions really off track and makes me struggle a little bit, then that's emotional resilience. So I do see them as two separate things. I think the more resilience we have, the stronger we are, both physically, emotionally, and mentally. But I definitely see them as two separate things for sure.
It's like that tree that bends in the wind. Right.
Yes.
That is flexible and strong because of the flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's funny you say that, because I literally was just writing about this on Instagram, that I very much believe that mental strength is mental flexibility. And I think, and what I mean by that is that we have to go beyond what we think we know. We have to shift our perspective. We have to be able to be cognitively flexible, emotionally flexible. And that really does make us stronger in mind and certainly body as well.
What can we learn? What do the physical challenges do for us that we can take into the rest of our lives?
This is why I love the mind-body connection so much. I mean, this is why, you know, it's interesting for so long in my practice, I was really working on, you know, the emotional and psychological and mental aspects. And really actually starting my work with Spartan has sort of brought me full circle into folding in some of the physical resilience as well. And I think what the physical provides in so many ways is a data point, right? And it provides muscle memory for us. So when we engage in something difficult that's physical, first of all, we expose our mind to also something difficult because, you know, I mean, you hear it from endurance athletes all the time that 95% of it, if not 99, was mental. And then the rest was just physical because in our mind, those stories that we tell ourselves, the self-limiting beliefs, the emotions that we're uncomfortable with get activated. And especially because we're made to survive. Like our brain wants us to survive. So it's going to activate some of the things that can get us out of a difficult situation as soon as possible. And so for us, I think when we are put in something that challenges us physically, inevitably we're going to get challenged emotionally and mentally and psychologically at the same time. And I think that's like such an extraordinary benefit because then when we get through it and when we overcome it, we can go back and take a look at, oh my gosh, I felt this way. Like I totally thought I was going to give up. Not my body was going to give up. I thought I was going to give up, like in mind and body, and I didn't. I kept going, or I told myself, you know what, you've been working so hard, you earn this, you can do it. So I think all of that like provides a library for us of the history of what we're capable of.
And so why does that matter? Like, you know, I talk about this stuff, I'm so buried in it, but I like to pull it back and think like, for the average person listening, like, who cares? Why is this going to help me have a better life? Why is this going to help me perform better or, you know, do better in business or in school or with my family? Why does it matter?
Yeah. So I think one of the reasons it matters, first and foremost, you know, what comes up for me is because life is completely unpredictable. And so right now it may seem like you're smooth sailing. Right? Like you could literally make the argument like, listen, I can pay my mortgage. My kids are going to be fine. They're probably going to go to college. If not, they're going to get a job. You know, like I've got stuff just happening in my 401k that's going to set me up nicely. Like I can just coast, but life is unpredictable. And SHIT happens. And so, you know, it's really important for us to not basically make choices that are based on today and what's happening today, but what could possibly happen in the future. And so I want to be prepared. Look at 2020. Like this is the perfect example. Certain epidemiologists may have known that this and virologists may have known this is going to happen. You've probably interviewed them. But, you know, many of us had no idea that for an entire year we would have to do at-home learning with our kids and be at home at work and figure out how to do Zoom all day long. You know, so, and, you know, lots of us lost jobs. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? So we don't always know what's going to happen. So, gosh, I want to be prepared. Like, I want to have a survival kit in my metaphoric backpack to make sure that if something bumpy happens in the future, I'm going to be emotionally resilient and mentally resilient and prepared to manage that. So that's the first thing that comes up for me is just, gosh, I mean, life is great and you can coast, but inevitably the waves are going to get super rocky at some point. So don't you want a nice lifeboat?
So what's in that kit? What's in that medical kit? This is so great. I want to know, like, I want the packing list. What needs to be in there?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that is in there is a library of all the times and, you know, a Rolodex, although I don't think people use Rolodexes anymore, but, you know, a Rolodex.
Database?
Yeah, exactly. Of all the times that I was challenged and I got through it, you know, and so oftentimes, for example, when I'm working with clients, And they'll say to me things like, I just don't think I can do this. You know, I will ask them to recall, tell me one time in your life when you didn't think you could do something and you did it. And we can go all the way back to third grade when you didn't think that you could read that very first chapter book. And then you did, right? So I think that library for me is absolutely in my backpack. The other thing that's in my backpack are mantras. I mean, I use a mantra every day. It's I'm wild, I'm wonderful, and I will succeed.
So explain that to me, because the whole idea of mantras can feel a little foofy, right?
It absolutely can. And listen, I have no doubt that there's a bunch of people listening. They're like, oh, mantras, positive affirmations. We've heard it before. You know why you've heard it? Because we have science to back it up. I mean, we have books that talk about actual studies that really show that positive affirmations and mantras work. And so as floofy and as fluffy as it might sound, gosh, I don't care if I'm only saying it in my head and I know that it works. It matters to me. So mantras are in my backpack.
So wait, I'm going to dig more. We're going to go into we're going to keep going through the list. But so tell me, like, how does one create a mantra? How do you do a mantra?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm big on the mantra really having to be something that somebody creates themselves. And I know that people have a hard time with that sometimes. And they're like, I just can't think of anything though. Then I think of, well, what just sounds good to you? Like, what do you think maybe you could just say? And you'd be like, okay, I could maybe say that every day. Right. The other thing that I ask people to do is maybe align their values with the mantra. So when they think of the principles that guide their life. So for example, Joe would probably inevitably think of resilience or grit, right? So a mantra for Joe, you know, could be, what's one thing gritty that I'm going to do today? Or I'm going to show up with grit and resilience, right? So to weave in those values and those principles by which you choose to live your life can sometimes help people feel like their mantra is really actually in alignment with who they are and who they want to be, rather than just sort of this like ethereal positive affirmation that they kind of think is not.
So should it be reflective of who you are, or should it be reflective of who you want to be?
Both. Because the truth is, listen, there are days when I wake up and I don't really think I'm that wonderful, you know, but there are other days where I wake up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm totally conquering the world. So, and that's just reflective of our external environment and anything that can be going on at any given time. Right. So your mantra, I think, should be both. This is how I can feel. I'm pretty sure I can align with that on any given day, but also this is how I want to be. Like for me, I'm wild, I'm wonderful, I will succeed. Will succeed is sort of future talking, right? But I could absolutely say today that I felt like today was a success. So I think it's kind of a combination of both.
Okay, we're on to our next item. So we got two items in our backpack now.
Okay, so we've got the library and we've got the positive affirmations.
Right.
So the other thing that, and this is like another kind of quote unquote soft word that people might be uncomfortable with, compassion's in my backpack. And here's why compassion's in my backpack. So shame is basically like the antithesis of compassion. So compassion is being able to be kind and gentle to yourself. Now, I want to be real clear with people. People confuse compassion with condoning something. So let's say I totally flubbed, like I yelled at my kid, right? We were in a heated moment and I said some things that I didn't want to say. So compassion would look like, you know what? You're having a bad day. You're doing the best you can. Condoning would look like, oh, it's absolutely no problem. You can do that in the future. They're two very different things.
So and it's almost like a growth mindset kind of a thing. It's like saying like, okay, this happened. What can
I
learn from it? What can I do next? Who did I just hear? Somebody was saying, and maybe it was you, who said this? It was the questions. I don't know who it was. The question that's key. It's the question that you have in your head when you're faced with something. And if you ask the question like, why are you so stupid? Why does everything always go wrong? You're not like, it's going to be a negative outcome. But if you ask the question like, what did I learn from this? How can I handle this better next time? Like, and that your mind just automatically addresses questions.
Totally. Well, I'm a huge believer of that. I think we need to eradicate why from our curiosity, because think of when you're a child and you've done something that maybe wasn't great. You spilled the cereal. You didn't hand in your mouth homework. The first word in the follow-up is always, why did you do that? Why didn't you get it done? In a you did something wrong.
I can say as a parent, as much as I know it's a bad idea, I say that probably 30 times a day.
I mean, listen, I do. It's not easy to eradicate.
And I'm not condoning it. I'm being compassionate with myself.
active compassion on screen. So I do think that the questions that you ask yourself are really important. And I think compassion is a part of that. And again, like for people who are listening and they're like, well, I have to be tough on myself. You can be tough and compassionate at the exact same time. I can say, you know what? That was not a great moment and you're having a hard day. And what are we going to do next time? Or how might I need to go apologize to my child right now because I really messed up? You know, how can I circle back and say, hey, we have to have a conversation because mommy lost it. And I'm, you know, like that's tough. That's not easy. Actually, the easy thing to just would be to condone it and say not a big deal and walk away. So compassion is 100% in my backpack.
All right, so I have another question, but I want to make sure we get the whole backpack.
Oh my what gosh, else? I feel like the backpack could go on and on. I mean, there's water and nutritious food in there.
Is there a wool hat for a cold day?
Like there's 100% a wool hat and some nice knit leggings as well. Okay. You know, the other thing I think that would be in my backpack though is an understanding and wisdom around how my brain works. And I think this is why people really need
so
to get
important,
curious.
Right?
Yeah. You know, we have two things that I think really can put us in precarious positions, confirmation bias and negativity bias. Negativity bias is our tendency to focus more on the negative than the positive. You get 100 people in a room, 99 say great things, one says not great thing, you focus on the one, right? That's negativity bias. Confirmation bias is our tendency to pay attention to that which confirms our beliefs. When those two join together, you have a monster.
You know, we know each other through Spartan Mind, right? And through all the other Spartan stuff. And we're also connected on Instagram. And so last year I started this thing, run a mile every day. And I used all the tactics from Spartan Up. You know, I made it public. I made a commitment, did all this stuff. I was like, set my intention. And after, you know, 10, 15 days, I had a trip to New York back when we were traveling. And I had to leave like before dawn and I was going straight to a meeting and then I was in a hotel and it was going to be dark by then. It was New York City, whatever. And so I posted, I said, what would be the equivalent in like exercises in my hotel room to running a mile? And Laura, you messaged me and said, nothing would be, that would be cheating, run a mile. And I just want to say like, that is what friends should do for you. Because it changed my whole idea of what I could do. And I would have let myself off the hook. And so having those friends that hold you accountable and push you further is so important. And so that's one of the things I value about you, Laura.
Oh, Marianne, I love that story. And I remember that too. I was always impressed with your commitment to the miles. But I totally agree. And listen, if I'm going to throw anything else in that backpack, it's your support system. You know, right. It's the people in your life who can not only hold you up, but challenge you to really be the best that you can be. So I'd throw that in there for sure. Marianne would be in my backpack. You'd be in there, a little figurine.
I would fit. We were just kind of joking about some of the mom challenges in life, right? And one of the reasons that we're doing this interview is that it's going to go live on International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask you, are there unique challenges and are there unique opportunities that women face in this area of whether we call it growth mindset, resilience, mental strength that we're talking about?
Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. We'll be right back to the interview. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about them. This has been a tough year for a lot of people, and mental health is finally something that people are talking about. So many people are struggling right now. Therapy can help. Sometimes the bravest thing to do is to do the hard thing, which is asking for help. BetterHelp says therapy helps. So what is therapy? Well, BetterHelp says it's whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be sitting around talking about your feelings. With BetterHelp, you can talk to someone privately if you're just not feeling right or you're having trouble dealing with stress or issues with your relationships. Whatever you need, you don't need to be ashamed of normal human struggles. You can feel better. Spartans, you deserve to be happy. And with BetterHelp, it's a little bit easier. You don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you. You can get help from home. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. so you don't even have to see someone on camera if you don't want to. Times are tight financially, too, but the good news is that BetterHelp is more affordable than in-person therapy. And you can get going really quickly. You can be communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. So join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. What's the greatest investment you can make? Investing in yourself. Because you are your greatest asset. Make that asset function even better. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And you, Spartan Up listeners, get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/Spartan. That's better. HELP.com/Spartan.
Are there unique challenges and are there unique opportunities that women face in this area of whether we call it growth mindset, resilience, mental strength that we're talking about?
I think so. So one of the biggest challenges actually that I think exists in, you know, among women, and it's well-intentioned, is, you know, right now, and maybe for the last 5 years, maybe close to a decade, but 5 years, certainly, we are in a place where women are getting more senior leadership positions, women are starting more companies, women are coming front and center. And we had a female run for president, we now have a female vice president. So we are hearing, amazingly so, you can do anything. Like, you can legitimately do anything. Unfortunately, we are putting that through a very fine wood chipper and coming out with the phrase, we should do everything. And this, I think, is getting us into trouble because we are slipping when it comes to our boundaries. We are saying yes to too much stuff. We are putting too much on our plate. And we are opting into that. That is, I think that's part of it, is that, you know, we are opting in. I mean, certainly there are women that need to work and also want to have a child. And that's not like, oh, I'm making a horrible life for myself. That's the choices that they make. Incredible choices, undoubtedly. But I do think that our perfectionistic tendencies and our desire to want to do, you know, anything has moved us into this unhealthy position of actually wanting to do everything. And this shows up all the time with my female clients in my work, whether it's, I'm not a good enough friend, I'm not a good enough mother, I'm not good enough at my career. The list goes on and on and on because they're splintered everywhere. And somebody literally 2 days ago just pointed this out to me. They're like, you are so splintered, because I had just named like 8 different things that I was trying to do that day. So I think we need to pause for a second and take a step back, reassess our boundaries. You know, where are we saying yes when maybe we want to say no? Who are we saying yes to that maybe we need to say no to? And that can include ourselves, not just other people too. I mean, oftentimes I will be the first to say that I really enjoy interesting projects. So very often I raise my hand and say, I'll do that when, oh gosh, I can't do that. You know, so I think we need to pause and reflect on our boundary structure around that. And I do think that that is particularly a unique feature of women right now, and especially girls and adolescents and teenagers as well.
And I think especially right now with the way work-life balance has been juggled. But, you know, I didn't think of this until you started explaining that, but I'm curious to push back a little bit. And I wonder if there isn't room to reframe this whole idea of, should we be great at one thing, or or do we undervalue being pretty good at a lot of things?
I mean, like, I think maybe that's a great point. I think it's absolutely a great point. I think, you know, certainly part of what I'm saying is not let's just pick one thing and do that. What I'm saying is let's make sure that we have our boundaries in check so that we have enough space and time and energy to refuel and to actually like be healthy and to take care of ourselves. I absolutely think that one of the things that we could do a much better job at is be okay, not necessarily being great or excellent at everything, but just being just being good. Like if I packed a just good lunch that day, that's fine. It doesn't need to be like an excellent, yeah, man, like seaweed and kiwi and all this stuff, you know? So I think, yes, I think we need to get better at recognizing like the B level work. I also think that that ties into how do we even just slow down to do that? How do we detach from overproductivity and, you know, really check in with ourselves on whether or not we are burning the candle at both ends?
So I feel like anybody who's listening to this episode and says, wait, I thought this was about mental strength. And you just said, like, do less, be nicer to yourself, like, have compassion, carry a backpack.
Yeah, well, then they're not listening because that's not what I'm saying. I didn't say be less. I said check in with your boundaries and make sure that you are reflecting on what you're doing. And do you want to be doing what you're doing?
I feel like we need to do like 20 episodes because there's so much. But I wanted to pull up one of your posts and ask
Great.
About it. The biggest mental health crisis right now, you know where I'm going. The biggest mental health crisis right now isn't the rise in mental illness. It's the widening circle that pathologizes discomfort, displeasure, and distress mm-hmm. as disease.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I love that you picked that one out, Marianne.
We always talk about doing hard things, and sometimes we think that that only means, you know, climbing a mountain, running an ultramarathon, but actually dealing with these difficult emotions is the hard thing. And this is something I think you've been a huge advocate for.
From my perspective, so much of the hard part of life is internal, is the distress that we experience internally from what is happening externally. And that's so normal. It's so normal for us to have a hard time with things. It's so normal for us to sometimes feel overwhelmed. It's so normal for us to wonder, am I doing the right thing or am I doing the wrong thing? It's really normal for us to get sad. It's really normal for us to grieve. Like there are lots of things that are incredibly normal. And I want to differentiate that from common, because common isn't always normal. You know, lots of people have GI issues. That's common. That's actually not normal. You know, that's not the way that your body should be. But all of these other things and all, you know, the emotional distress that we can experience just through living life, just through being a human on this planet is really normal. And I think that because we are getting so used to providing external comforts, and creating, you know, the most comfortable access for all of us and the fastest, right? We therefore are losing our tolerance for the discomfort that happens internally. And I think that to me is worrisome. And I think we need to normalize more what it's like to have a hard time. I mean, in 2020, again, I'm going to use this as an example. Many people were uncertain, anxious, sad, felt alone. Those were all very normal feelings. You know, they were very congruent with what was going on. People lost their jobs. People lost lives. So, of course, we feel that way. And gosh, we can tolerate it. Like this is where I worry, because, you know, oftentimes when people feel distressed, they're like, uh-oh, this isn't normal. Let me go to my doctor. Doctor maybe puts them on a pill. All of a sudden, their feelings are, you know, muted and cloudy. So, but guess what? We can actually learn to tolerate our feelings and learn to ride the wave of what's distressing.
So how do you do that? What are some things that people can do to increase their tolerance for their own anger, sadness, all these feelings that might be uncomfortable, fear?
Let's speak to the person right now that isn't necessarily like feeling super hopeless and sad, but it's just like, okay, I want to do this, Marianne. I want to learn how to tolerate my distress and be more comfortable feeling angry, sad. Okay, one of the best ways that we learn how to tolerate distress is that we put ourselves in more distressing situations. I'm not asking you to go and pick a fight with your spouse. What I will ask you to do, though, is read, watch, or listen to something that you don't agree with or something that makes you uncomfortable. So, for example, if you don't want to hear about plant-based and you don't want to hear about, you know, what they do to animals, I want you to go and watch a documentary about that, right? Because you're going to put yourself in a situation that's distressing, and tolerate it. We're not sacrificing a relationship here. I'm not asking you to pick a fight. I'm asking you to watch something that creates distress for you, and then you can sit with it and learn to tolerate it and learn that it's actually not going to poison you. And same with reading or watching something. In 2020, I listened to some podcasts that, like, when I was running and I would listen to them, I would scream while I was running because they frustrated me so much. But it was such an exercise in exposing myself to that very feeling, and then tolerating it and working through it, you know, and just allowing it to come in and allowing it to go out. So that, I think, is like the number one thing that people can learn to do when they're learning how to tolerate distress is actively putting themselves in a situation that is distressing for them. This is what Joe does with Spartan Race, right? Physically. He physically asks people to get uncomfortable, to tolerate it, to work through it, overcome it. And at the end, when they cross the finish line, it's the saying, you'll know at the finish line. People are like, oh my gosh, I did that. I feel better. This is the same, but mentally and emotionally.
So, and I wonder, you know, you talked about, you know, somebody feels uncomfortable. They think it's not right, and they go to their doctor, they get a pill. Short of even that, I feel like there's that moment of discomfort, and what do? You reach for your phone.
I know.
As soon as you're a little bit bored, a little bit angry, a little bit frustrated, a little bit whatever, you can just tune out, and it's so easily, you know, it's right there.
That's an excellent, excellent point. And so I think in those situations, I love that you know that, like you're aware of that. And so for anybody that's listening, that would also be something I would encourage them to do is ask themselves, how do I offload when I'm uncomfortable? And by offloading, I mean, how do you take what you're having a difficult time tolerating and like either avoid it, numb it, or put it on to somebody else? And we all have those coping skills, whether it's, and it's an unhealthy coping skill, but reaching for your phone, reaching for a glass of tequila, going out for your fifth run that day, reaching for the Dorito bag, completely engaging in a Netflix crime drama, you know, whatever it is, we all have those tactics to offload.
So how does somebody, how does somebody become aware of what their tactics are, and how does somebody then learn a more appropriate, more sort of growing, you know, a way to grow in the face of those to grow their tolerance?
So the first, how do you know what it is? You could get kind of curious, right? You have to just start asking yourself a question like, okay, when this, and maybe do a little bit of an inventory over the last week. Like people who are listening are probably familiar with writing down your food or writing down how many hours a day you're sleeping. Do a little bit of an offloading inventory. Like each day when you felt something uncomfortable, what did you do that day? Like what was your first response? Did you get it from the table and head over to the kitchen? Did you, as Marion say, reach for the iPhone, right? Like start to take inventory of that. And then you have to start beginning a new association and a new habit by doing. You don't create a new association just by thinking about it. Like, oh, well now, you know, when I want to reach for my phone, I'm just not going to. No, that doesn't happen. Like now when you want to reach for your phone, make sure instead what's right there is a pencil and a piece of paper and you can write a bunch of stuff down, right? So you want to begin to actually create a new association with, okay, I feel uncomfortable. So this is now what I'm going to do instead because, oh my gosh, I always reach for the phone right now. A lot of it is about self-awareness. And I know that sometimes people listen and they're like, yeah, but like, does knowing anything really help? Yes, it absolutely does. When you know, then you can begin to make changes and do different actions.
All right. So we could do this for days and we're going long already. So I'm going to make us wrap up. As we wrap up, you know, I really like to give the listeners some concrete kind of steps and actions. Now we've got their backpack that they can load.
We've got some
tactics that they can use to practice their resilience. Mm-hmm. But are there a couple of things that you think people could kind of make part of their daily routine that would help them be more mentally strong and mentally and emotionally resilient?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that I would ask anybody who's listening to do, if you don't know what your values are, is to do a simple values exercise. And it literally can be as easy as Google list of values. You'll see like 8,000 images come up. Pick the first one where it's just like a list of 100 values and pick your core values. And what I mean by your core values are the guiding principles by which you choose to live your life. Like if you were going to have three or four things written on your headstone, what would you want them to be? Like Dr. L lived her life with adventure. She cared deeply for her family. She laughed a lot and was as honest, you know, was honest or held her head high with integrity. One of those, you know? So I want you to do a values exercise. So make sure you know what your three to four. Do not pick more than that. Do not pick like 15 values because you cannot be in alignment with 15 values at any given moment. So pick three to four values. And every day, I want you checking in with your values. How am I in alignment with my values right now? And what I mean by in alignment is how I'm behaving, relating, and thinking in alignment with this value. Is it congruent with this value? That right there is challenging in and of itself because you've got a lot of different things going on. You've got self-awareness, right? You've got a values-driven life and, you know, really getting curious about where you're in alignment. And then you've got the accountability piece of if you are out of alignment, then how do you self-correct? How do you put yourself back in alignment? So that values exercise would be like the number one thing. And I feel like there's six strategies in there already.
Well, that's awesome. So let me, last question, how can people find you? They want more Dr. L brilliance.
Well, I'm on Instagram at drlaurapence.com. You can also, I started a new company last year called Lifebox, which is a box of questions that spark your curiosity and exercise your mind. So you can find me on Lifebox, also on Instagram at Lifebox, LAGHFBOX. And then reach out to me, email me. You can, my email's on my website at drlaurapence.com. Send me an email, you know, let me know what you're thinking, what you're having a hard time with, all that kind of stuff. I'm accessible for sure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time. Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. Spartan Up listeners can save 10% on their first month by going to betterhelp.com/Spartan.